The hit movie Bob Marley, One Love, is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Celebrate the life and music of an icon who inspired generations through his message of love, peace, and unity. If you missed Bob Marley, One Love in the theaters, now's your chance to watch at home. Stream the hit movie now on Paramount Plus, rated PG-13. Head to ParamountPlus.com/OneLove to try it free now.
Hey, everyone. It's our favorite time of the year here at The Black Effect. We're heading to Atlanta for the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival, and we're not going alone. Nissan is back as our partner, and they're continuing their Pitch Your Podcast Lounge at the festival, where you'll have the opportunity to pitch your podcast idea live and share it with the Black Effect team. So get those podcast ideas ready. And remember, you can count on Nissan to dial up the thrill in your adventures, no matter where life takes you. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk? Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar 20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
From grandmothers who whispered in their baby girl ear, to fathers on dimly lit street corners instructing young soldiers to always keep their eyes open, you be queen, you were fire. You were passed through centuries on the hands of your daughters. They called you wisdom. Proverbs. On the backs of diamond-eyed school children who grew into hymnals recited by amethyst-holding urban philosophers who recited neighborhood commandments out of the windows of restored El Camino chariots to keep the warmth in their blood. Be wise. Be smart. Be black opal, brown quartz, bloodstone, and prayer. Be every form of gem. See, king told scribe, scribe told son, son told wife, wife told her daughter, and daughter told the ancestors, and the ancestors told me that you would come to give wisdom to thousands. They said you would come. Dropping gems.
Hey, welcome back to the Dropping Gems podcast. As always, I'm your host, Debbie Brown. First, I just want to say thank you to everybody who listened to our last episode, which is our episode on purpose. I got so many DMs, emails, messages from people that it really resonated with. And I just thank you for listening and being open to my thoughts on it and the information. And it did... It created so much feedback and dialogue and so many like follow-up questions that I will be coming out with a part two in the next couple of weeks. So that is on the way for those that have been asking me. All right, today's show, super excited. My homegirl is here and she is legitimately one of the most interesting people that I know, and she's also like so effortlessly chic.
Oh no.
And as soon as you hear her voice, it's extra smoky. So I'm really excited to have my dear friend who is now my neighbor,
yes,
on the show today, celebrity makeup artist Joanna Simkin.
Hey. Oh, and this is my Kathleen Turner voice. Yeah. Yes, neighbor.
So effortlessly sexy. Joanna. So Joanna is big time makeup artist. She has such a fascinating story, so many adventures. If you follow her on Instagram, I'm pretty sure you're obsessed with her. I have so many people that I'm friends with come up to me and like, wait, you know her? I'm like, well, yes, not only do I know her, but like we barbecued.
That's better than what my husband gets, who gets everywhere from airports to planes to events. Are you Joanna Simkin husband? He goes, yes, yes, that is my official name. That would be me.
That's exactly who I am. And you always see a lot of like the globe trekking on her stories, a lot of political commentary, and then her beautiful daughter, Noelle, yeah. aka Smush, killing it on the gram.
My little Smush bear.
So you do some of the biggest names in Hollywood.
I do. And it's so weird to hear like someone else, like even introduce you as like popping. Cause you're, yeah. just, you know, you just
celebrity
go about your day
makeup artist,
and you do the biggest names. And I'm like, I guess I do. I'm like, not in a jaded way. Like you just almost don't think of it like that when you're in it. Do you know what I mean? You just kind of go and you get a booking and you work and you're running around and then like, it's a normal day for you. And then, yeah, maybe like there's a moment where you're with a client and all of a sudden you're like from the car to like the late night show and there's 500 people outside with like cameras and so, and you're like, oh, you're like famous. Cause like, I forgot. But yes, I do some very, very famous people.
Well, you know what? And I mean, you do like everybody, like you do pop stars, you do actresses, you do rappers, you do designers, you do, are you allowed to say your clients? Like, do you?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like a lot of people probably follow me on Instagram from like two big ones, which would be Issa Rae and Zayn Malik. But yeah, Kerry Washington. It's so funny cause it's like, sometimes I have to go through my Instagram and I'll be like, oh, right. I've worked with you. But yeah, I mean like, from Amber Rose to, and sometimes I don't like to claim someone as my client, but like I've covered for other makeup artists doing their clients, like for Janelle Monáe and people like that.
You do Vera Wang.
Yeah. It's like, oh, you just, and I'm like, I just did her last week. I forgot. I mean, it's,
And even like male grooming. Like I know you recently did Schoolboy Q,
guest of, and by the way, Charlamagne on the same shoot, the two of them together. Another previous guest. Yes. I worked with both of them. Yeah. Troy Sivan, who's like a really big pop singer. I work with The Weeknd. I've done a lot of male grooming, Jason Derulo. And yeah, it's like sometimes like I might even have to go through like my agency's website and click through and be like, oh, right. Oh, yeah, we worked together. That's crazy.
And recently you did that really iconic cover of Issa.
Oh, the Essence cover loved.
I feel like that was like the cover scene around the world.
I feel like, okay, I have like a huge respect for Essence just as an institution. And I feel like, not that they were getting stale, but like, you know, their cover, they were putting a lot of the same people and the covers looking the same. And then they hired a new editorial director, Moana Lu, and she, I feel like, has revamped the look of the magazine. And it has such a different feel, because I feel like that Issa cover, like springboard, like those last, the covers with like Ciara and Iman and Tiana Taylor, and this cover that came out like 2 days ago with Tracee Ellis Ross, that is like bonkers, like, who was shot by the same photographer who shot Issa, by the way, Itaja Jordan. But I feel like, yeah, they've sort of like breathe new life into the editorial at Essence, and it's just a joy and a pleasure.
Because I feel like for a long, I think like the whole aesthetic of like Black Girl Magic is really changing. Because I think like for a long time, especially with like Essence or like Ebony or like a Jet, even like the covers to me were more like aimed at like the church audience, almost
a little pageanty.
They were very
in the
pageanty,
makeup.
Really like glossy, just very like, you know, it would be like a bright blue pantsuit, or like
a lot of red blush, and like, I think like those publications and photo shoots in general for Black women weren't allowed to feel as fly and editorial as like a Vogue or an Elle or a W or a Harper's.
You weren't taking those risks.
You weren't seeing the fashion. You weren't seeing like maybe like drama and beauty in the hair like that you should be seeing for Black women, and like the skin being highlighted properly.
Yeah.
And I think like it's so important to make, because it's like, you know, I've shot Issa for multiple covers and I've shot other Black women for editorial. And there is just something to be said for being put in a lens and an eye of like booking like an Itaja Jordan to shoot it.
Yeah.
Just like the photos of Issa, like Itaja saw her skin the way I do her skin. Do you know what I mean? Like she didn't just sort of do like this generic lighting that they would do on like when we're sharing a cover with like three white ingenue actresses who all look great in that lighting. And there's like no adjustment for Issa. So she just looks flat and whatever. Whereas like Itaja like saw her, because Itaja sees herself. You know what I mean? So it's just like the importance of like, not that you have to be, I mean, I'm not Black, but like, not that you have to be Black to see it, but like to just have a respect and an understanding and to know to like make those tweaks and those changes.
Can we, and I really want to dive into that because you're not Black, but mm-hmm. you are very much, I feel like you are very much entrenched in Black girl magic culture. You know?
I think I am. You know, okay, so I grew up in San Francisco, which if you live in San Francisco now or visited San Francisco now, you'd be like, and if you visited or lived in San Francisco in the 80s and 90s, you might be like, oh, and it's so funny. I worked with that comedian. Here's another one, Ali Wong, who also grew up in San Francisco in the 80s and 90s. And we had this whole conversation about it was such a special time to grow up like in the Bay Area as far as just, you know, for to Rachel Dolezal, to kind of weirdly be a little transracial, not to use that weird word, but to just sort of just, I think to like really effortlessly flow and be comfortable. San Francisco had such a magical mix at that time that is missing. And I don't know if you've seen that movie, The Last Black Man in San Francisco, they kind of like address like that changing demographic that's happened in the Bay Area. But, you know, I think that I just kind of, it was like not an effort of mine. It was just like naturally what I that's how I grew up. It was my friends in high school. It was, you know, I grew up in the 90s when like hip hop was like super popping and like that was what was cool. And, you know, I think like, in you know, we're around the same age. And I think like at our time you were either listening to like, you know, Nirvana and Pearl Jam or you were listening to like Biggie and, you know, I was listening to Biggie and, yeah, I think it just sort of like naturally flowed.
But you know what, too? Like more so I would say, and for that, you're absolutely right. Like, I think if you grow up in a coastal city, like a New York, a San Francisco, Los Angeles, the way that you experience diversity is completely different than other places.
You experience it in a very authentic, like I'm not even trying to experience it way.
Your lives just, are very like blended
just who
together.
You are. And like, I can't be in a room with you and your husband and our mutual friends and like not sort of like understand every facet of like lingo and cultural references. And we're playing Taboo the other night and it's like even like the inner jokes, you know what I mean, those things come natural when that's like who you're naturally around.
Because you know, in cities like that, it's really more like this dance, like this beautiful merging of cultures in every moment. Like for breakfast, I might have American. For lunch, I might have Korean. For dinner, I might have, you know, Ethiopian. Like, and that's just
like
the
literally
way that you're very
my comfort food
up to
is
other
like
cultures.
Dim sum. Like when I'm sick, I want like har gyau and I want like shumai. And I, you know what I mean? Like
I always do like a tom yum soup when I'm sick.
Yeah, like but it's grass. Like that's just crazy. That's like your comfort food. Whereas someone that grew up, you know, in not a coastal city, they're, you know, like mom's chicken soup or like McDonald's or, you know what I mean? Where that thing is that makes them feel better.
Yeah.
That they just weren't exposed to so much other stuff.
I was actually having this conversation when I lived in Houston with someone and they were like, what do you, you know, because I was always homesick. Anywhere I've ever lived that's not LA, I have enjoyed my time, but I was always deeply homesick.
That's facts, because I met you when you lived in New York. That's facts.
And even in New York, which was like the pinnacle of like my career, I was like, I don't want to be here.
I live in LA.
I miss California. But one of my friends that I was talking to, she's like, what do you miss most? And I was like, I just miss the diversity. And she was like, what are you talking about? She was like, Houston is one of the top three most diverse. That was, if you guys heard that on the mic, that was the doorbell. But that it's one of the most, she was like, Houston is one of the top three most diverse places in the nation. I'm like, yeah, in theory, like Houston is, it had so, there was a huge like Nigerian population, huge Indian population, huge Chinese population, but no one was intermingling.
That's what I
say. So it's
say
like very much like you
Atlanta.
Over here, me over here, you over there.
Yes.
And it wasn't like an effortless mix where the streets that I drive down, I'm seeing all of this, the food that I'm eating, the people I'm conversing with, you still had to go out of your way to have those
experiences. It's so funny. I always have that conversation with people about Atlanta because when I say that there are, it's a struggle sometimes to find like very diverse metropolitan cities. People love to say, what about Atlanta? Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, Atlanta's got everybody, but they're super spread out and they don't mix.
Yeah.
And it's got this weird, like segregated feel still. It still feels like the South. You know what I mean?
I'm
like,
you know what? One of my first experiences in Texas when I was, this was 2010. So this was like my first, it was my first time there. One of my girlfriends was a club promoter and she's Chinese. And she was like, hey, let's go to Mix Club
Candy?
Tonight. Yeah. Candy. Oh my God.
I'm like, I know her.
I didn't know you knew Candy. Oh my God. Shout out to Candy Girl.
Shout out to Candy. She runs Houston, guys. Yeah. You want some nightlife. Oh my goodness.
Listen, listen. We are days. Ooh, running the streets. So she was just like, all right, girl. Like, she would always take me around and take me out. And she was like, let's go to this mix club. And I was like, what's a mix club? She was like, oh, you know, it's like where everybody parties together. And I was like,
we just call those
clubs.
Do you
mean like just a party, like a club? We get to the door, right? So I'm probably the guy had no idea what I was, but I'm black. She's Chinese. And then he looks at us. He said, okay, stand over here. He said, I just let some black people in. So you got to wait till some come out until I can let you in.
Stop.
And he said it like very nonchalantly like that. Like it just was like, hey guys, oh yeah, just stand over here. As soon as some black people leave, I'll let you in.
What in the world?
And I remember, and this is like 2010. And at that point I came straight there from LA. I didn't know. I had never in my life heard anything like that said out loud. And I was like ready to fight. Like I was like, what? Like I was like, what is happening? And nobody was fazed by it. And then I was just kind of like, yeah, you know, I mean, every place is different. I never experienced like overt racism there. I had a really great time in that city, but there is still the way we look at diversity, especially in non-coastal areas, is just so deeply different at the most fundamental of levels.
Well, like the most interesting thing you said is that nobody was fazed by it. Like that is just, that's business as usual there.
Yeah, no one found that rude at all.
Like I would be, you guys can't see because this is a pot. My mouth when she said that was on the floor.
Yeah.
Like I have never.
I honestly, it was like some of the biggest culture shock I had ever experienced.
That's insanity.
And I wasn't used to people being so split up into just certain. And that's not to say that doesn't happen, obviously, in your New Yorks and LAs. Like, yes, like there are for sure some lines in the sand everywhere that you go. But yeah, so it's just interesting the different experiences you have, especially when you start seeing more of the U.S. and more of the world.
I think it's just like the effortlessness of it, like that I would never walk into an event in L.A., New York or San Francisco in the 80s and 90s and be like, I just let some black people in, so I'm going to need you to wait for a couple minutes until I let someone else in first. Like, what in the world is...
Girl, I was like, take me home now.
You're like, we're done here. We're done.
I will burn this place down.
Where did you guys go in?
No. No, we didn't know. Because I was just so, like, there's no way I could have said, oh, okay, gotcha, and stood there and then watched black people walk out so I could walk in. There, like,
the irony is that
that
was the mixed club.
That was
the whole point of the club.
And so once I got inside, what it really was white people and then five black people. And that was like a mixed club, you know? And they would play like
hip hop. Top 40, like Nelly.
Yes, yes, yeah. Yeah, a lot of hot in her.
Lot of Nelly on these streets. A lot of Flo Rida. Anyway.
You know what I really wanted to, when I brought up the Black Girl Magic thing, what I really wanted to talk about was not just that obviously like you are hip to so many different cultures and belief systems and you kind of are able to just beautifully and effortlessly flow through all kinds of communities and just effortlessly fit in and share space. But more so like you are one of those people, like when people talk about allies, like I think of you, I think of like Carly Hustle, like mm-hmm. like the
shout
the
to Carly
level
Hustle.
Of woke that the two of you are is just so inspiring and beautiful. And it's not, you're not trying, like you're just being a decent human.
You know what's also interesting about that though? Carly Hustle, also from Northern California in the 80s and 90s. It's a special place, but yeah. Continue.
Yeah. No, but, and so it's like you work on so many of Hollywood's like biggest black actresses, like mm-hmm. some of the biggest stars, some of the people that are the front runners of our culture. And so it's like, it's just very beautiful to see. And I just wondered really if you had any thoughts on it.
I am aware of it. Like, and I don't mean I'm just like, oh yeah, I'm aware. No, I'm like intentionally aware of it. I'm intentionally aware of the responsibility of it. I'm aware also of like, the optics of like in a time when everyone's promoting Black Girl Magic and make your crew black. And I'm like aware that I'm like the white girl that's like let into these spaces and hired by people that like really champion it. And they like, you know, they kind of almost put their credibility, as it were, on the line. Like, you have someone like an Issa who's like super like, I'm into hiring black women, da da da, and yeah, like I do her makeup and the rest of her team is black and almost overwhelmingly women, you know what I mean? So it's like, it doesn't make me any I couldn't be calculated if I tried, as far as like what I present, but like I'm so aware and I'm so sensitive to moments. It's so funny, I was thinking the other day, I was watching, I work with a stylist who's phenomenal often. I work with him with Issa. His name is Jason Rembert, and he is an amazing black stylist, which there are few of them in Hollywood. And they're amazing. It's like him, Jason Bolden, Wayman and Micah, Law, Colin Carter.
Yeah.
I could name you 50 white stylists. And he has created a fashion line called Aliette, and they had the runway show yesterday. It was New York Fashion Week. And I was like, I was invited to the show, which was amazing. I couldn't attend. I was here in LA because I live in LA now and I'm your neighbor. Hey. And I saw he hired a makeup artist who's a dear friend of mine who I love, Jessica Smalls, to key the show. She's black. She's amazing. She does Janelle Monáe. That's who I cover Janelle Monáe for. She is phenomenal. So deserving, aside from the fact that she's black. And that I know that he intentionally was hiring like black people to work the show. And it's like, I think about these moments where it's like, you know, she wrote like this beautiful thing to him that said, you know, I remember us starting as assistants. And I was like, you know, it's like, there's a part of me that could be like, well, me and Jason started together as assistants too. You know what I mean? Mm. And I could be like, why wouldn't he call me to key the show? You know what I mean? Why would he give her? And I'm also like, A, what's for you doesn't pass you by. B, I'm like, I so appreciate that he intentionally went out of his way to be like, I'm sure he looked at like his people as like, who's going to key my show? And he's like, who black is going to key my show? Because that is important to me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's almost like I have to be aware of those moments of not, and I didn't feel like any like jealous. I mean, I like teared up when I saw what she wrote about it, like how he made her feel when he asked her to do it. And I just thought it was so beautiful and I was so proud of her and she did an amazing job. But it's just like moments like that where like, it's so easy to not live what you speak and to just sort of feel away because you weren't included or, you know, and to be like, and I don't think that that's allyship. Like, what kind of ally am I if I'm like, well, what about me? I'm like, well, then that's nothing to do with what you speak and what you actually feel. And it's like, I don't even feel that way. Like,
yeah.
I was so happy and proud to see him do that. I'm so happy and proud when I see like Kalana Barfield and Elaine Walteroth and Lacey Redway and Jason and Jessica, and they're attending like special events being put together during Fashion Week for black creatives, because like those things have been missing for so long.
And
it's like what I scream about like every day, basically, with that's what I promote is black girl magic and black boy joy and all of it. And I love to see everyone supporting each other. It's not to say that I don't want to get booked on things, you know what I mean? But it's like I love watching it, and I just honestly I just feel like it's an honor to be included in this magic. It's like what's the quote, like God created black people and black people created style. I'm like, I'm just so honored to like be seen in that circle of like, wow, she's like fly enough to be part of this, you know what I mean? And I'm like, that to me is such an honor, because and it's like, no matter what people would say, like obviously like black people set the culture. Black people set the trend, like the music, the style, the look. Everybody wants to, you know, like everyone wants to look and sound and feel like black people. They just don't want to, you know, have the struggle of black people. But you know, it's like, it's an honor to effortlessly fall into it and not feel like I'm like, because I feel like there's other people that sort of like are peripherally in it that don't sort of naturally, and I feel like they're forcing it, and there'll be like moments, whether it's like on Twitter or missteps, where I'm like, I couldn't even see myself making that kind of misstep because it's just not naturally me. And then it makes
there's
you wonder.
There's a lot of pandering.
There's a lot of pandering, and the missteps make it so obvious because I'm like, you just showed your whole hand when you said that. Like, I would never even say what you just said. You know what I mean? Like, why would you, like, the fact that that even came into your mind is, you know what I mean?
And it's like, it's kind of funny how, because I think for the most part, like, people of all, like, non-white communities since the dawn of time have seen all the appropriation that happens to their cultures. But it wasn't really necessarily like chartable in a tangible way until like Black Twitter arrived on the scene.
Yeah.
You know, like For sure. Like when social media came into play, we were actually really able to see like, oh shit, like people are really creating the next thing based on
moments,
their commentary.
And movement.
Even if you look at like what happened, what just happened with Popeyes.
Yo,
like
Popeyes. And, like, did you see Popeyes is BYOB right now? They said, yo, if you want a sandwich, we're not making a sandwich right now, but you could bring your own bun. We have mayonnaise and pickles. It's just three tenders, guys. They were like, can y'all relax?
What?
Yeah, that's literally like, that's Popeye's tweet today. BYOB, bring your own bun. You can make your own sandwich, guys. I was like, this is, but even just like the way the fast food companies tweet at each other. It's
oh
like
God.
Black, it's Black Twitter. It's
hilarious.
Amazing. By the way, if you're not part of Black Twitter, why are you on Twitter? Sometimes like, have you ever like accidentally gone down a weird rabbit hole off like a political retweet and seen
yes.
like, do you know that there's Twitter that exists outside of Black Twitter? What a miserable place.
It's such a miserable place.
I'm like, is this what y'all are using Twitter for?
And it's so funny like what people will use their time for. Because I remember like I've actually stopped tweeting for the most part. I don't tweet. I don't Facebook. Instagram is just kind of my jam. Like last year I was doing like a social media detox. So I deleted everything off my phone. And then like 4 weeks later, I realized that I had never put Twitter back on. And then I just kind of stopped using it.
Also, Twitter's a lot less fun since the 2016 election. Let's keep it 100.
God, it is. So I was just going to say, like, I used to be, like, after the 2016 election, like, there was a moment in time where I was just, like, I was just so, so rabbit holey with politics, right? Like, it was actually, like, making me sick because I was just so shocked and devastated at the outcome. And I had like, you know, so I was constantly tweeting about Trump and I was constantly adding him and being like, you ain't shit.
By the way, shout to Insecure writer and star Natasha Rothwell, who faithfully every day still tweets to remind Donald Trump that he's not shit.
Really?
Every single day in some form of words. So, yo, by the way, like every single day, it's like, it's amazing.
Dude, and his like minions came for me and they started leaving like bad book reviews on my Amazon and like all this stuff. And
what
I was like,
kind of time?
Who are you awful people?
Imagine having that kind of time.
I know. And just that kind of passion mm-hmm. behind something like that, like behind another person disagreeing.
Listen,
it's just very, yeah. It's just a bizarre
election.
Space.
We could do a whole podcast about the election.
Yeah,
we are in a weird time, guys. But anyway,
yeah.
The whole point is Black Twitter is everything.
Popping.
And yeah.
I want to talk about our origin story a little bit. I have a few little twists and turns I want to take this conversation. But so I want to talk about how we met. Like,
yes.
I know we met in like 2012.
Yes.
And I think before that, like Instagram was just starting to, people were just kind of starting to Instagram. Like you'd get maybe like 10 likes on your picture and be like, oh, yeah. Wow, 10 people saw this.
I'm in double digits now.
What? but I remember at that time, like Twitter was heavy. I used to be super heavy on Twitter. And so I knew that I had never met you. You were living in New York. I knew that we had like a lot of mutuals. Seen your name and, you know, I had seen some of your content and I was like, oh, she seems so cool. And then at that time, I was working with Sway on SiriusXM, and we were about to shoot a spread in The Source magazine.
That's what it was. I couldn't remember what it was for.
I helped him like launch the show. Like yeah. I was the original co-host of the show. And so we were doing like a lot of press about it and a lot of different like cool stuff. And I remember I hit my girl, Vanessa. Vanessa was on the show.
Wait, Vanessa was who referred me to you?
Yeah, that's how we got connected.
Shout out to Vanessa.
And I was like, Vanessa, I need a makeup artist. Like, we're going to shoot something in the morning. Like, I don't know what to do. And she was like, okay, I got you. Let me get my girl, Joanna. And then I remember you came in the studio and we were like interviewing Ice Cube that day. And in between interviewing Ice Cube, like when we'd go to music, you would do my makeup. Like you would run up and like do my makeup. And we just like super hit it off. And so much so that after I got off work, like you came with me to my house that same day we met.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, we connected. Also, by the way, Sway used to be on the radio in the Bay too.
Yes.
So there's like that other weird Bay Area connection we have. Okay.
He's such a national treasure, but
I mean,
yeah.
What a living legend. Love
yeah,
him.
Yeah, truly.
Yeah, that is so funny. And then we went to, I still remember your apartment. Oh my gosh, I loved it. We looked in that building too for a minute, and I was like, yeah, no, I can't live in Times Square. That apartment was fire, but that location was not the wave for relaxing.
Like, it was expensive at the time, but the rent has gone up. Like, my last trip to New York, like, I went by, because sometimes I'll still go by and say what's up to, like, the doorman at the building or the bodega owner next door, which he still remembered me. So now it's like my pilgrimage every New York trip is to go say hi to him.
LA's the best, but like New York's the best too. That's the best.
New York is special. But now like the rent went up like legitimately 50%. Like, yeah, it was insane. I wouldn't still be living here if I was in New York.
Who can afford this? By the way, we were living in Williamsburg. I couldn't even believe, they put up new buildings all around us. And when I saw the rent, I was like, who actually can afford to live here?
It's
and
crazy.
The buildings would like fill up. I'm like, what gentrification?
I'm really obsessed with like watching Refinery 29's where I live for how much like IGTVs they do.
I'm obsessed.
And so they highlight different people and what their apartments look like. Like for $1,500 a month, this is where I live. For $3,000 a month, this is where I live. And it goes everywhere. So you have like people in the Midwest, California, New York, and you just see like the differences. Like the person in New York, I pay $12,000 a month and they're in a closet. And you're like, oh.
Nothing make you more upset than watching like House Hunters or like Flip or Flop. Love It or List It or Fixer Upper.
It was me, the couch, and HGTV.
Dude.
All day.
I just got my nails done and they had Fixer Upper on, and someone bought a house for $90,000 and they had a $300,000 total all in budget. So for $300,000 with the renovation, they got this like 5-bedroom masterpiece ranch. I was like, wow. But I mean, then like you have to live in Waco, Texas.
Yeah. So. They're all in like Waco or like College Station. Yeah. And I'm like, I don't like football that much.
Yeah. Like, You're like, oh, right. No, I can't have that house in Hollywood. No. Okay. Yeah. No.
I want to talk about like your journey into being a makeup artist, because I think now especially too, like makeup has become such a phenomenon in our world, like especially with like YouTube and Instagram, and like you have all of these like rising stars and all of these like styles that didn't exist 10 years ago that people are rocking, like the heavy contour or the
They existed in like
a lesser, like a more subtle,
in smaller, in niche areas. Like when you would go to like an amazing drag show, you would see like makeup at this level, things like that. And that has really crossed over to like a mainstream look.
Like
an
everyday look.
An everyday look, which is an interesting switch, because I feel like for years, makeup has been marketed as, you know, enhancing, not transforming. And now makeup is being marketed as transforming rather than enhancing.
It's interesting because I feel like everything right now is being marketing as transforming from, and literally on every level, like on a physical level, like you'll have one end of the spectrum transform through the fitness craze, or on the other end of the spectrum transform through surgery. Then you have like transform your soul, transform your mind, like everything right now.
Everything's being marketed as like how you are is not right. And so like, that's a much deeper, bigger issue.
Let's start with your origin story, because you actually worked in like advertising before you even got into makeup, and makeup was your second career. And like right now I talk about that a lot because I'm on kind of my second career, you know? And it's like, I think a lot of people...
But you're like merging them beautifully right now.
She's
wearing
now.
Like evil eyes, but she has like the microphone in front of her. It's very old Debbie and new Debbie.
Yes, that's my goal, is to like intersect the two,
I think like
evolutions
that's like,
of me.
Yeah, like I think every part of you contributes to who you are now. Yeah, so I worked, I did marketing and PR for a beauty brand. So it was always beauty for Carol's Daughter. Again, shout to major Black girl magic, very organically. And I think also probably on that note, learning how to do marketing and PR through that lens of Black girl magic before Black girl magic hashtag like was even like
existing.
A thing. You know what I mean? Like we sort of like set that tone for it in like literally like 2005 with like Jada and Mary, and then like Beyonce and Jay invested, and it was just like a big thing. We were like, you know, Lisa Price, who is Carol's daughter, you know, she was into her natural hair way before like natural hair was a thing. You know what I mean? And people would come to her when they were like, I'm transitioning, before like transitioning was even like a word. You know what I mean?
They're before you had like the numbers and the curl type and the
right. It was just like when you just wanted to like, you were like, I think I don't want to relax my hair anymore, and you would go knock on Lisa's brownstone door, and she would like whip you up something to like get your curls in order, like that. I mean, so like, yeah, the origins of like a lot of pop and black girl magic, we could definitely like shout out Lisa Price just for kind of like, you know, pushing the like love your natural hair vibe early. So for me, coming in and learning, so it was like a twofold. It was her, and then it was Steve Stout, who is, we all know, like a master marketer. So to like learn marketing and advertising from somebody like him, centered around, you know, for lack of a better word that didn't exist at that time, black girl magic, it almost created this like perfect storm, I think, for me, and just naturally how I'd grown up and knowing so many beautiful black women, and just kind of always feeling like black women were so, like, the skin, the hair, like, when I was young, I just remember, like, the women that I looked at, I, like, loved Halle Berry when I was young. I was like, why don't I look like her, not like some random blonde cover girl, you know what I mean? So I think, like, just sort of having this real appreciation for the beauty of black women, mixed with understanding, respect, and you know, a deeper story of like, this is why our hair is such a big deal. This is why, you know, anything like this is why this stereotype exists, that we don't like to swim because we don't want to get our hair, like learning all those things from like that business side of it, and sort of like learning how to speak to that need, I think gave me also like a unique path to sort of, when I did veer off and do makeup, to just sort of like understanding the needs of black girl magic. Do you know what I mean? Like the things that like black women weren't being served in beauty, to make them feel beautiful. Like we talked about, like the magazine covers, like the lighting's not right. And you, I mean, we know this story a million times over, like there's no foundation colors for us. There's no, I could look at your range right now and know that my color doesn't exist. And you know, there's like a whole bunch of like issues with beauty still, where like you need to sell multiple colors because there are naturally multiple tones in brown women's faces that are not in lighter women's faces. And to just sort of understand that and to see that and to know how to enhance that, I think all those things kind of snowballed so that when I left Carol's Daughter, I decided I wanted to move to LA. And I was like, I'm not going to get another job. I want to just do makeup. I really love it. I'd been doing stuff on the side. And
how did you come to love doing makeup, and how did you start that process? Was that something that like the sparks of that passion existed in your childhood?
Yeah, I loved it. It's so funny. My oldest friend in the world that I've known since I'm 2 years old, she's like nature girl, like, you know, Northern California, crunchy, like she doesn't wear any makeup. Her aunt always was like really glam. Like she would always be in the bathroom, like doing makeup. And I've known this girl since I'm two. Like we would spend the night at her aunt's house. We would, you know, we would just get shuttled around like between all our families. I was like, geez, this girl's like my sister. It's so funny. My best friend just mentioned me. She's like, I just remember you would like sit in the bathroom and like watch my aunt do her makeup like all the time. I mean, like 6 years old, 8 years old, I was fascinated with it. I was like, this is crazy. And I remember my aunt gave me one of those like little cheesy, you know, you like open the box and there's like 80 eyeshadows and then cream blushes and little cheesy. Yeah. And I got that like for my
birthday. And then
birthday.
Like the little foam. Like,
yeah, the little foam applicators is, I mean, the worst. But, and like complete mix of bacteria, now that I'm a professional, I'm like, oh my God, these things are so gross. But anyway, now my daughter gets them, which is, I'm like, okay, we're done with this. But I remember I got that from my aunt for like a birthday or Christmas. I definitely was in elementary school. I had it. My mom told me I couldn't play with it. I couldn't bring it to school. My mom was like super feminist, like, she would like some makeup now, but like when she was younger, she was like very anti like makeup, and she was like, grew up in New York and San Francisco, like burn your bra, the whole thing. And I remember she came to pick me up after school one day, and I was like playing on my friends, like we were all putting the makeup on each other, and she like got so pissed, threw it in the garbage, like, I told you, what? You can't play with this, like I was so upset. It's so funny because now, of course, she'll like ask me to do her makeup and I'll be like, do you remember?
Right.
I'm just saying.
When you tried to crush my dreams.
You remember when you just tried to kill all the vibes? And she's like, I do not recall that. Anyway, I'm like, I vividly remember it. But yeah, so I loved it from always. And I would do everyone's makeup, like all my friends, whatever, you know, from like the cheapest, whatever stuff we had, you know, going into our parents' drawers and pulling out like old Revlon single color, you know what I mean? But just playing with it and like understanding like where to put light, where to put dark, and just kind of like learning from like young and playing with it. And I remember like when I was like in my 20s, makeup wasn't a thing the way it is now. And I was already wearing it. I loved it. And I loved, you know, enhancing my eyes. And I would do like bronzer as like contour before I even really knew what highlight and contour was. And I remember I moved to New York, and I think maybe like in California, girls were wearing more makeup, but like in New York, girls were not wearing makeup yet. And I remember I'd get like a lot of attention on the street. Which, I mean, whatever, New York street harassment is New York street harassment. But it was like OD, and I was like, wow, like me and this other girl that I knew that was from LA, like she would wear like a beat. Like she was wearing the Instagram beat back then. I was like, this is intense. But like, yeah, we would get a lot of attention. I was like, God, makeup really is like transformative and attention getting and things like that. So it just made me like really want to play with it and understand it. And now it's like, I mean, this probably sounds just like foreign to anyone now to be like, what? It was revolutionary that you were wearing makeup? Yeah. I'm like, everyone looks like they're my Instagram explore page now. But like, yeah, at that time it was, so it was like a thing that I loved early. And I think before, and maybe it was because Instagram wasn't a thing and social media, and we weren't seeing that like there were these pockets of people that were into it. And it made me really love it. And I had a friend who was a makeup artist, and she would call me and have her assist. And she's like union. She does like TV shows and everything now. Like she's on like Shameless, I think. Like she does big shows. But she would call me in to assist her, and I would like literally call out at Carol's Daughter and like go assist her. But it was like great to like learn how to be on set, and I was just so into it. So then when I decided that I wanted to move to LA, I was just like, this is definitely what I want to do. I don't want to get a job again. Like I can't go in an office. I'm gonna go crazy. So I'm just gonna do this. Yeah. And it was, yeah, I mean, it was, you know, you gotta fall before you fly, right? It was rough in the beginning, but it also wasn't so saturated at that time. Yeah. So I was able, and I had a ton of contacts, which was great, because I don't think, I mean, now it's like a whole different, like the way that makeup artists started when I started was like, you would build a book and you would test shoot and you'd create a portfolio and you would share your portfolio. Now it's like Instagram, get your following up, tag people, get your following up. You know what I mean? That's how you get eyes on you. So the old version of that was build your book. I didn't do it that way, and I probably wouldn't have done it the Instagram way now either, although I did definitely use social media to my advantage. But I definitely had great contacts, and I had a PR and marketing background, so that was right when Twitter was popping off. And you know, even though I was barely busy, I just really knew how to, so like twofold. A, I knew how to use like Twitter at that time to my benefit, which was to make it sound like I was busy and popping. But because I had an old school advertising, marketing, PR background, I already knew the like, don't blow your load on the, like now they put on call sheets, like no social media, no photos, because people are just like Instagramming everything. These like kids that don't know any better. And then like the whole project is being like put online. Everything's leaking before, like no one wants to present their art that way. Like your music video you're working on, the movie, the commercial, the photos, you can't post those photos ahead of time. Now they put that on call sheets. I knew that already. So I was like, if I say so myself, pretty masterfully using Twitter. And at that time, because Twitter had just started, it was like that time where like you literally would just like import your address book and be like, do you want to follow each other? So because I had this amazing address book of like publicists, managers, beauty reps, you know, artists, like famous people that would like, because we were in each other's contacts because of my previous job, like we would all follow each other. Yeah. So I had like a really good following to speak to immediately without having to like buy followers, tag them, yell into the void to get attention. You know, it was like
I
a perfect
old Twitter.
Old Twitter.
Twitter was so like between like 2008 and 2011. Yeah, like at most 12.
12.
It was so fun and popping and just like
it was like when we would all watch To Catch a Predator together.
Yeah,
like that was like premium elite Twitter. Yeah,
yeah, it was like it was a really special time that it'll never be recreated.
But. Yeah, no, now everything is, and same thing with Instagram. Like everything is like there's no, I don't even know that there's a way to it's almost like at that time everyone wasn't on to social media.
Yeah.
And you know,
only industry people did.
Only industry people
were on Twitter.
Absolutely. Like, and now everyone is. I think, you know what's so funny too, is I always think about like in the 80s that like people that understood like the internet and like chat rooms were considered like nerds and like whatever. And now it's like you look at someone who's not on social media and you're like, you're not on any social media? What kind of nerd? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like, it's cool now to understand. But it was also like at that time you had to really understand like coding and things like that to like really understand how to get on a chat room. Yeah. And now it's like, obviously,
I
just
used
accessible.
To think I was fire at coding, like when I had a MySpace page.
Oh hell yeah,
to be able to build
music and it was like lights and what?
I used to have like little glitter coming down like rain on my page.
Can we discuss that Tom from MySpace taught an entire generation how to code though?
I know. And then Facebook took it from us.
Tom, a real one. By the way, don't feel bad for Tom, because I remember one time someone posted on Twitter, whatever happened to Tom from MySpace, that dude just fell off the face of the earth. He retweeted something like, my company got bought for $500 million and I'm fucking your mom in Bermuda or something.
Oh,
I was like, whoa,
God.
Shout to Tom from MySpace.
Spicy.
Spicy. I was like, whoa, comeback.
So now,
hey everyone, I am so excited. The Black Effect is live. This April 27th, the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival is headed to Atlanta's very own Pullman Yards. Last year was incredible, and this year will be even more thrilling, especially with Nissan coming back along for the ride. Nissan is returning with some empowering activations to support Black excellence in the STEAM fields. Have a podcast idea you've been eager to share with the culture? Well, Nissan is back with a Pitch Your Podcast Lounge. You'll have the chance to record your podcast idea and have it shared with a Black Effect Podcast Network team. But that's not all. Nissan is taking the stage to spotlight some of the HBCU scholars from their own Thrill of Possibility Summit, Nissan's action-packed weekend of community building, mentorship, and professional development for HBCU scholars pursuing professions in STEAM. The Black Effect Podcast Festival is the event to be at. You won't want to miss this, because no matter where life takes you, Nissan will dial up the thrill of your adventures. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details.
Opportunity is not equally distributed. To every Black entrepreneur listening, I want to make sure you have the tools and resources you need to grab your next opportunity. That's why I'm telling you about the 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative. The 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative is an award-winning program created by Shopify and Operation Hope. They're on a mission to start, grow, and scale 1 million Black businesses by 2030, driving wealth creation for the Black community. Out of 6 million employer-owned businesses in the U.S., only 2.3% have Black ownership. This program gives Black entrepreneurs tools and resources to level the playing field, from free business coaching to tailored training, and extended free Shopify trial. Shopify's made a 10-year, multi-million dollar commitment to the program, and it's working. The initiative already started, supported, and engaged with over 334,000 Black businesses, helping them operate businesses that sell anything from skateboards to coffee beans to apparel. Business owners love this program. Simone Harvin, founder of SC Creative Group, says, "The 1 million Black businesses experience for me was unlike any other program I've been a part of, primarily because it was for us and it was by us. Here at Drink Champs, we are always interacting with our listeners, many being Black entrepreneurs. Shopify is one of those platforms that empowers and emboldens entrepreneurship. So chart your own path for business success with the 1 million Black Businesses Initiative and Shopify. Bring your business to Shopify with an exclusive 120-day free trial at shopify.com/BEN, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/BEN.
First he changed music, then he changed the world. The hit movie Bob Marley, One Love, is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Celebrate the life and legacy of an icon who inspired generations through his message of love, peace, and unity. In this powerful and uplifting film, discover Bob Marley's story of overcoming adversity and the journey behind his revolutionary music that changed the world. If you missed it in theaters, now's your chance to watch at home. Stream the hit movie Bob Marley, One Love, now on Paramount Plus, rated PG-13. Head to ParamountPlus.com/OneLove to try it free now.
In this evolution of you, you are a mom of a 4-year-old.
I am. She's amazing. She's perfect.
And you know how, like, is so your daughter, she's biracial.
She is.
But she will be seen as and received as a Black woman in society.
Absolutely.
How do you, is that something that you think about?
All the time.
Really?
All the time. not so much. It's funny because as much as I talk about sort of like being like an open ear for like understanding and listening, there's just no way. And I know that there's no way I could understand really what it means to walk in the world as a Black woman. I could listen and I can yell as much as I can about like injustices and things that are not right and try to fix them in my own small ways, whether that's just sort of like helping set a beauty trend where that like Black is beautiful, whatever those things are. But I could never like, I don't know what that feels like. Mm-hmm. And I never could. So I think about that a lot, actually. I think about it almost every day, honestly, because, you know, I do her hair every day. I intentionally stock her bookshelves with brown faces constantly. Like, yeah. all her entire bookshelf is inclusive of
like
something.
I love the books you have for her, and you've gotten Quest so many amazing books.
I'm but so like, big on starting it early.
When I was at your house, like I was doing story time with her, and she had this beautiful book, and it was about all like the colors of like Black womanhood. And so you had every
I'm
shape
I'm a pretty little Black girl. I love
yes.
that book.
And she was like, Debbie, that's you. Look, this one's me. And it was just so like, so I could just see her like, I don't want to say wheels turning because she's not giving it that much thought, but it was so effortless, her understanding of race, her understanding of like colorism at that age. Like it was just.
Yeah, it's like, I don't want to, it's such a weird dance. And I'm sure that that's a dance that someone that who has a child of any ethnicity that's not white, a full one that you think about in the, like you're going to send your son into the world and he's going to be a Black man. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like you think about it and you know, it's like at what age do you sort of like kill the innocence of like, what does it mean that the world sees you this way?
Yeah.
And so right now, obviously I'm not trying to do that, but we also will read books like, you know, there's a lot of children's books that we read where like, it'll be a story about, someone maybe that had to like, that was encouraged to like change their name to something that sounded Russian because like you're a ballerina and like ballerinas are supposed to be Russian and you could pass as Russian. So,
wow.
And so funny. So I had talked with a friend of mine who's a mother, and her children are beautiful, blonde, blue eyes. Like she's white, her husband's white, but she's also very woke. And she kind of wanted to talk to her pediatrician about, I think it was more, it wasn't a specific race question, but it was about like, I think it was like a birds and bees question. And the pediatrician had told her just like across the board, read the story as it is. And then just field the questions as they come. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, don't over explain anything because like their brain isn't processing it yet.
Yeah.
So like when I read her the stories of like people being encouraged to change their name or whatever, part of me wants to be like, but because they said this and don't you think this is wrong? But I'm just like, I'm just going to let her ask.
Yeah.
Because I feel like, you know, they're going to receive the information once they're thinking about the question, that means that their brain now is going to be ready to like process the answer a little bit better. Mm. But yes, I think about it every day. I do my best. Do you know what I mean? I give her right now she's four. I fill her bookshelf with brown books. I intentionally make sure that she sees amazing Black women and all women. Honestly, I don't want to like all lives matter the whole thing, but like I definitely want her to see like amazing
for sure.
women.
Yeah.
And it's funny because my husband is the one who's like, because we have like a lot of amazing Black art up in our home, which is like I kind of push for it. I'm like, let's put this up. We have like an amazing Hebrew Brantley like fly girl, like it's literally like framed in her room. And we have like Kadir Nelson's up and things like that. And he's like, and I have like these vintage like makeup posters like Revlon that have like these like 1950s white women, whatever. And I was like, he's like, no, he's like, you should put one of those up. Put it up in the bathroom. He's like don't erase that you're also part of her.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And but it is like this weird thing because to your point, the world is gonna see her as a Black woman. It matters that I'm here as her mom, but like does it matter that she's white? Not in America, like maybe in other places, but like here we've kind of made it so it doesn't. Like
I see both sides of it because I definitely get what he's saying. Like your story and your life and your family history are monumentally important, but then also coming from your perspective, it's kind of like, well, the world will teach her about being white.
She's going to see plenty of beautiful white women on billboards. Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. I want in her house to see, I want her to see beautiful black women and black men being amazing. You know what I mean? I'm like, she'll see white women on magazine covers, regardless, on billboards, on TV. You know what I mean? It just kind of is what it is. So,
you know what? I like so much, because now we're both parents, you know? I think about child rearing as a whole constantly, which I guess is pretty obvious because my kid is one. But just when I, like, the kind of struggle I have a little bit with thinking about the ways in which, like, the sacred guiding I will do of him will shape him is like when I bring him to play, like my own spiritual work, right? Like how much is like, what are the best ways to share like tools for wholeness with this tiny soul that can't comprehend much yet, you know? Mm-hmm. Cause like I'm in this program right now. I'm doing, some second career schooling, I guess I should say. But I'm doing like a couple different, I'm doing like a collegiate psychology program, and I'm also doing a spiritual psychology program right now that I'll be doing like for the next, I've almost finished 1 year and I have like two more years to go. And you know, one of the things I noticed, because my class is filled with such a mix of people. So you have people that experience severe traumatic harm in their family lineage and their personal lives, like lots of generational trauma that are starting to awaken. You have, I guess I would put myself in the category of someone that has been journeying for close mm-hmm. to a decade. So I'm still learning and growing, but I am very awake and aware of a lot, and I've made a lot of shifts. And then you have people who were raised in this, right? Like a couple classmates that I met have been doing like Kundalini yoga since they were 2 years old, right? Like they've been going to Amazing. Ashram since they were children. But this is what I've noticed, and this is what I think about constantly. And I hope I can, it's a lot going on in this head, y'all. So I hope that I can word it in a way that is receivable. But what I've noticed about all of us, about the experience of being a human being, is at a soul level, we always crave what we were missing on both sides of the spectrum. So if you came from a problematic household, your soul is really searching to experience peace. You're really longing to have this ideal of the quote unquote perfect family or perfect relationship or things like that. But you're kind of pulled into your natural reset of dysfunction because that was your normal. Mm-hmm. On the flip side of that, what I found is when I meet people that were raised with this, like raised by deeply awakened parents that put them into this kind of highly, highly spiritual environment, is a lot of them are very apathetic. Their soul is craving suffering. Their soul is craving chaos. So a lot of the people that I've met in that space actually go through these phases where they are seeking out harmful experiences because they don't know what they're like, right?
It's almost like the good girl raised in the suburbs that wants to go out with like the bad boy. You're missing that feeling.
And that's how all of us are, because if like Earth is our school and we're here to learn something, that's why life could never be fair. And
it's kind of a callback to what we talked about earlier about how everything's being marketed to transform.
Yeah.
Like we humans crave transformation.
Because you know what? It is our natural state that we have run from for so long. Like when people even say stuff like, oh, people don't change. Now listen, there are people that maybe in this lifetime, it's not their destiny to change, because there are some stubborn people that will hold on to their toxicity till the day they get in the ground. But our natural setting is change. Like if you look at nature, fall, like the transformation of fall, right? The cycle of life and death, the cycle of day to night, the cycle of, you know, everything we see in every moment, like really speaks to the fundamental, not just desire, but responsibility to change in every moment, you know?
So then almost, and I kind of get where you were going with that as far as like what was missing. So like I should be represented in there.
No. But I'm more so speaking of like the way I'm really like unraveling a lot of thoughts of what I want my parenting journey to look like.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Cause I'm like, does that mean that no matter, like you should almost like, you want to be this perfect parent and create a perfect home and all these things, but it's almost like, then they're just going to go seek out that toxicity. But like, you don't want to be intentionally toxic. It's a very fine line.
You don't want to be too like, too, what's the word? Like when you're very like,
helicopter
coddling your child. And like you don't, like I don't, on one hand, I don't want to like pad Questfall too much, right? Like I don't want to make his life so like puppies and butterflies and rainbows. And because then I want to be able to cultivate resilience in him, because he will not be in my household forever. He will be in the world, and the world is a very challenging place.
It goes against our nature as a mom. Like, you just want to protect them with
everything. But then on the flip side, I'm like, no, like, I don't want him getting disappointed. I want him getting hurt. I don't want
precious baby.
Like, my precious gift from God, you know?
It's such a
dance. And I guess that's the thing that I'm really experiencing right now, is the idea of surrendering to what the parenting journey is, and knowing that no matter how good my intention is, like, his spiritual curriculum is his spiritual curriculum. He will have the experiences placed in his life that he is meant to have in his life on a soul level, to learn and uncover what he's meant to know, no matter if I'm a great mom or a bad mom. Like, life, he will experience life in the way that his soul signed up to experience it.
And, I'm like, I don't know how you feel about like reincarnation and things like that. But, you know, I think
100% I'm about that life.
You know, your soul is, and we had this conversation, I think, one night, that this was the night like we really bonded. We like went to this dinner for like 4 hours and had this really crazy, deep spiritual conversation.
That's also like super us. Like, me and you are the friends that like, like if we're in the same city at the same time before we became neighbors,
because now that's every day.
Like, literally, I remember this one time that we were like, I was like, girl, like, I'm in New York, but I have to leave in 2 hours. You were like, meet me at the Met. That's the museum in New York.
The and Metropolitan.
We were like, let's spend an hour walking the museum and catching up. And that's like kind of our thing. Like, we like to be walking, experiencing, and then having these like deep conversations over delicious food.
Yeah, it's all the food, high-level food is very important. But we were talking about, I remember this conversation because I had had this conversation one time. So I remember I was younger and I kept having a recurring dream. And I think I told you about this, but you probably don't remember it. So I would be in the mirror and I was me. And then I was like, I was like a young me, I don't know, 17 or something. And I found like a facial hair and I shaved it again and it kept growing and growing until it was like a full beard. And I looked in the mirror and realized I was a boy and I was a French boy. And it was such a weird thing. I was very clear that I was a French boy.
Wow.
But I started as me in the mirror. And I remember telling my mom about the dream and I was like, I keep having this dream. It's so weird. And my mom is, she's not a religious person at all, but she has a sense of spirituality that is goes back to like her kind of like hippie, you know, floaty. And she said that she feels that, you know, she believes strongly in reincarnation, and she thinks that like whatever we call God is sort of all the soul. It's like, you know, how matter is neither created nor destroyed. It's just kind of transferred. Yeah. Like all of the energy of the universe is God, and it's all of our souls. And you kind of get sent back to live it again and again and again until you're a whole person.
Yes.
And then you're done. Then you get to go be part of God. You know what I mean? Like that's what she can. She's
that
like,
100%
she's like,
is my belief
yeah,
system.
She's like, it's not like some guy sitting on a throne saying, no. I smite you. She's like, no, she's like, that's why we have to be responsible for the energy that we bring into every space, because we're all part of the same thing. So it's interesting that you say like Quest journey is going to be his journey, like whatever he signed up for, because you don't know yet if he's an old soul, if he's a young, because you've definitely met people where it's like they're brand new, and then you've met people where you're like, oh, this might be your last go round, like a year. And you meet 3-year-olds that are like wise, and I don't mean like smart, like they can like they are just soul wise. And then you meet 50-year-old men where you're like, oh honey, you're brand new. You got so many spins around this planet. Like, I'll catch you next time. Like,
it's so interesting because like that's given me so much grace for everyone I come in contact with in my life. Because even if we're all in the same school per se, like I might be working on my master's right now and you're mastering kindergarten, right? And there's no, it doesn't mean I'm better than you. Yeah. It doesn't mean, you know, that there's this like leveling happening. It just means like, we are meant to learn different things this go around. And I'm super convinced that there are some people that they're just like in this lifetime, they're just meant to experience humanity and learn how to survive. Right. So as long as the core of their needs are met, like they are putting food in their stomach and have somewhere to sleep, like
that's pretty much the entirety of what their growth is going to be, because that's their destination this trip, you know? Yeah. Like, this incarnation of my life, I was always destined to be a seeker. I was always destined to be deeply curious about myself and the world so that I could unlock new levels of me and, like, end patterns and stop some generational trauma from moving forward to all of my descendants, you know?
Absolutely. And and it's just like you meet people where they are.
Yeah.
And I think that's how you give people grace, right? Like you just kind of, I mean, listen, and some people, like, it doesn't mean you have to force everyone into your space. If they're not good for your space, they're not good for your space. But I think everyone would just get along better, and everyone, the world would just be so much calmer if people could just sort of allow grace, just like what we talk about, like where someone has time to get online to, like, we disagree about this one fundamental thing and now you have time to come and write bad book reviews and things. Right, like, it's just like, can we just give each other a little bit of grace here? Like, it's fine, guys. Like, we can disagree on this. It's fine. I didn't say you were deplorable, even though I implied it. Like, we're not talking about politics, but I agree.
also just being in full acceptance of what the reality of whatever situation is. And I think a lot of people mix up, like, the true definition and intention of the word acceptance. Acceptance does not mean to agree, right? Like, acceptance doesn't mean, like, someone does something bad to you, I accept it. So that means that you are encouraging it or you're in support of their treatment. It just means that you accept that this is the reality of what is now in this moment.
Your life will be so much smoother.
It doesn't mean you don't want it to change. It doesn't mean that you are not going to change it. It just means that you're not fighting your reality in every moment and causing your own suffering by trying to make life something that it just is not right now.
God, you know? Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change.
Yeah.
The courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. That's literally what that quote is about. Do you know what I mean?
But we get so caught up in the use of accept to mean that allow. We think accept means allow, and it doesn't. Accept really just means to be kind of, it's almost, in that's present, like, observation
coexist.
Of what is currently
coexist
true.
With what is happening. You know what I mean? And to not fight it. And weirdly, kind of going back to, like, growing up in the Bay Area, like in the 80s and 90s, I always try to explain to people, I'm like, that was sort of the energy at that time. Yeah. It was, and I think that if you meet people like a Carly Hussle or Ali Wong or me or the Ebro, maybe, like, people that you might meet with, and maybe, like, they have strong opinions about things, you'll find that most of their strong opinions are sort of almost like would be considered like socialism opinions, where it's just sort of like, because I think that pocket of the country at that time was very live and let live.
Yeah.
You know, it was very accepting. Like, you know, we were, you know, obviously, like, Harvey Milk was, like, the first gay mayor, and Mayor Moscone, or he was a supervisor, and Mayor Moscone, and, like, you know, that just, like, San Francisco has always been a much more accepting place. Like, I think about, like, I read so much this year because it was the 50th anniversary of Stonewall riots during World Pride, and reading about that experience that, like, so many trans men and women had and gay men and women had in a city like New York that is touted for being so accepting and just hearing with, and then, like, knowing, like, the history of, like, my city and what gay and trans people went through in at that time, and just kind of like real, I'm like, no, you guys don't know from accepting. Like, this is an accepting place. And again, it doesn't necessarily mean, like, I agree or this is my life. It's just kind of like we coexist together, whether it's good or bad in your mind or not. And I think, like, growing up in that energy all the time just kind of leads to calm. Like, I don't know that it doesn't, like, when we talk about, like, what's missing, I don't know that you're going to necessarily now always feel calm, but, like, for me, it's worked. Like, I generally feel calm unless I see something that I feel is so blatantly against humankind, which, you know, to your point, I can be very loud politically on social media. But it's just sort of like an outrage. And I just feel like there's a difference when the outrage has to do with basic humanity.
Yes.
Or when the outrage is based on like your personal views preferences about something. Yeah. You know what yeah. I mean? And I think like understanding, like being able to take a step back and like looking at, is this my personal preference or is this like our basic needs of humanity being yeah. met, to your point? I'm outraged when the basic needs of humanity are not being met.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean, it's... Even in all like my namaste glory, it is like it's deeply difficult to navigate ignorance.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Like there was this meme that went around on Instagram recently and it was like, I'm in therapy because of all the people in my life who are not in therapy.
Facts.
And I'm like, ah.
You're like, whoo, I need this on a t-shirt.
Same.
Oh, you know, like, those lingua franca sweaters, those like embroidered sweaters. I'm going to get you one with that saying on it. That's going to be my gift to you.
Oh girl. Yes.
Like, cause Lord. Yeah. A word. Yeah. A yeah. word.
But that's really what it is. It's like, how can we seek our own growth and then manage our experience of still living with the rest of humanity
yeah.
and not letting it engulf us, you know?
Yeah. And then that's when like your self-care has to come in a little yeah. bit, and however you practice your self-care, whether it's a meditation or crystals or a workout or a social media detox.
What's your self-care?
The gym for sure is my self-care. I love it. Which is funny. Cause like, I'm not like, per se, I'm not like a fitness girl. Like I'm not like I look fine in my clothes. I'm not in shape. You know what I mean? Like, but,
you look pretty fire to me.
Well, thank you. But no, like, thank you.
I saw that ass when you walked in.
I received that. Thank you. Let me learn how to take a compliment. Thank you. Just the, whether it's placebo effect or not, like the endorphin rush from a yeah. workout, like I just kind of sets you in a great mood for the day. So I always see like that meme going around on like workout Instagram, which is like a 1 hour workout is 4% of your day. Like, and I'm just like, that's like, it's 4% of your day. Like just, and honestly, like it will reset your whole day for me. Like it just gets your energy up. It gets your mood up. Like you could be pissed off walking in the gym and feel great because you just gotta, you know, you open up your blood vessels and you just get your energy moving. I love a spa moment. Like sometimes I just like, I have a very physically demanding job. And also like mentally. And I think like that's something that gets discounted. Maybe not so much in any job where like you're very close, but I think like, especially like in celebrity makeup, there is, and hair too, but especially makeup, just cause I'm like right in someone's face. Like maybe the hairstylist can't hear cause they have a blow dryer on or whatever. But like me and the client are like talking, and it is the client, like you're there to service the client, right? And the client is getting ready to go on a red carpet, go on television, go do a photo shoot, whatever it is. They have to present their best face to the world. So it's almost, part of your job is to make them look good, but part of your job is to also like make them feel good. Like you got to pull someone out of, you know, I've done like Issa's makeup 2 hours after we heard like Nipsey was murdered. Mm. I have done, you know, someone's makeup right when they found out a loved one passed away. You know what I mean? And it's like the interviews don't wait. The photo shoot doesn't stop. And yeah. I've had multiple publicists, Vanessa included, tell me that, you know, one thing I love is that I can get you in there because I also like, A, I know they're going to look great, but B, like, I know that like, I'm going to get like the person that I need. You know what I mean? Because it's like you can't send like a celebrity out to do an interview and they are just closed and down or upset or that, you know what I mean? Like you got to pull them out of that mood so that when they walk out of that room, they're like, hey, the flip side of that is that, like we said, like energy doesn't disappear. It just
yeah.
exchanges.
Yeah.
So if you're in a funk and I'm pulling you out of it, that funk is going somewhere. Do you know what I mean? So it's a very emotionally draining job sometimes. People are like, what music do you... I'm like, yo, I love nothing more than just get in my car and like turn the radio off after a long day. Cause yeah, I'm like, everyone's been talking. I've heard everyone's energy. It's like chit, chat, chit, chit. And I'm just like, I just need silence before I go home to a 4-year-old who is chatterbox, you know what I mean? So
lit,
I'm like,
lit. Yeah,
I don't know where she gets that from. Anyway, but yeah, so honestly, like silence is my self-care. So if I can mix it with a massage, I love that. Like,
yeah.
But people are like, do you want a playlist? I'm like, if you could like turn the music totally off, honestly, for the massage, like this sounds great. Like your pool trinkling right now is such a great sound to me. I'm like, I should sleep with a sound machine. Cause like every time I turn it on in my daughter's room, I'm like, this is delightful.
Yeah. It's funny you say that. Cause like something that I just did for myself was I got on Amazon one of those, it's like a big circle. It's from Philips, big circle. And it's like a daylight light. like a
alarm. Ambient light, and it gradually gets brighter to ease you into it.
I was starting to get really stressed out setting my alarm on my phone.
The sound
and
is a
even
lot.
When I try to put it on the delicate one, right? Like just like a chimes, it's still jarring. It's still starting really abruptly, really loud.
And
on
also
phone.
No matter what sound it is, you know it's your phone, and our connection now to our phones is stressful.
And then for the first thing I do in order just to quiet it is to pick up my phone. And I'm instantly seeing alerts. I'm instantly seeing notifications. So I have a little sleeping bag for my phone now that I got on this retreat
so
that I was
smart.
On. That I put it in there at a certain time. I don't look on it until I've woken up, done my meditation, started my coffee.
Smart.
But I have really been enjoying. I get awakened by the sound of grasshoppers and bird chirping, and it starts really, really light. If I set my alarm for 6:30, which is typically in a morning, I try to get up a little bit before Quest. And then it'll be
that's a mom pro tip right there. Even if you can give yourself 15 minutes,
yeah,
I'm telling
to not
you.
Be awakened by cries.
Yes.
Is
clutch.
It's such a gentler start to my day. It's worth it losing the sleep, but
that's free game right there. Yeah. That's a mom pro tip right there, guys.
And so when I set my alarm to 6:30, right at 6, the light gently starts to slowly over 30 minutes get to a daylight feel. And then the chirping starts 10 minutes before really low. And then it's chirp, 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 tweet, tweet, tweet. And I wake up and I feel almost Snow White, oh, come here, little bird. It's just so lovely.
I'm just picturing you're on the balcony, nya.
Yeah, exactly.
a Disney princess.
But it's that to me represents my self-care right now. Even if I don't have time for other things, being able to choose the feeling I will start my day with when I open
Easing
my eyes.
Easing yourself into this world is major self-care.
That's the bar.
Yeah. I'm
exactly
easing myself into the world because it's a lot. And it's and again, I know we bring up social media a lot because it just exists and it dictates everyone's lives. But the access that we have now to just so much information and so much energy. And even Instagram is, you're Twitter, I didn't. Instagram has similar energy. It's you got to choose what you see. And
I've set my
now the algorithm messes with you now. So it's not even what I want to see. Anyway, it's what
most
I've chosen to
time.
See. And it's still not what I want to see anymore. I'm like, why am I seeing 3-day old? I don't want to see this.
And I've set my alarm on Instagram in the back
end. You do
end.
A timer.
I do a timer. I think my timer is set to 1 hour and 5 minutes total, right?
For the whole day.
For the whole day.
That's smart.
I love about that. Now, granted, there's some days where I can't sleep, right? So I might be up from 4 a.m. to 6 a.m. just staring at the ceiling. So then I've reached my Instagram max by 8 a.m.
That's
typically
when you go to level 784 on Candy Crush.
Oh my God.
Hit me.
But now I start my day around 6:30. And now I'm making it without my alarm going off till about 6 p.m. So that means I'm not really on Instagram. And when I am, I'm probably posting my own stories or my own stuff. But it's probably I don't know what this math is going to be wrong, but it's just an example, guys. But it might break down to 4 minutes out of every hour during that day. I scrolled, you know?
What I would say is the great thing I've noticed since moving from New York to LA is I don't spend my time so much in the back of a Lyft anymore.
Yeah.
I'm my phone screen time in general is just way down because that hour commute that used to be to Midtown, I'm now driving that myself, so obviously I can't scroll,
right?
So I'm like, oh, my screen time is way down. Like for me, it's like if I'm on set and it's just hours and hours of takes, I'm just okay, I'm just gonna open Instagram because
let me just
or I'm gonna jump out a window, one or the other. This
for
is
sure
endless. But generally
Instagram has its positive, especially now that I've really filtered my follows. All I see when I'm on Instagram is my close friends or funny therapy jargon or different DIY videos or self-help stuff. So when I'm on it, I'm actually getting a lot of ideas to channel my creativity. I'm getting nourished and fed. I don't follow any of the gossip pages, but I also blocked all the gossip pages.
That's what's smart
because
it
keeps them off
algorithm.
My it changes it
everything.
So I don't see when people post stuff like that, even that I follow, and it also doesn't ever come up on my Explore feed. So if we were to open my IG right now on my Explore feed, the only things that you would see is like therapy talk, home transformation. Like I love like site, like pages like The Jungalow or like, you know, home decor and crystals. Same. And that's it. Or like DIY videos of like BuzzFeed tasty, you know, like, and that's it.
So is there any area of like self-care, self-help, spiritual that is cringy to you though? Like, are there people that sort of like sell spirituality that's cringy? Because for me, I follow a million makeup artists that I think are phenomenal. Like I follow intentionally, like beautifully inspiring, you know, editorial makeup artists and makeup artists I admire and things like that. And then, which my explore page thinks means I want to see, you know, ultralight beam highlight noses and cheeks with like 17 color macro eye close-ups, which like no shade guy. Like if you do that makeup, I'm 100%. I think it's an amazing skill and precision. It's just like not necessarily like what I want to see on my explore page as far as like, creative inspiration. It's just more like an amazing technical skill I love to watch.
If you click on those when you're on your explore page, on the top right, you can click those dots and say, see less of this.
That's what I need to do.
So I've done that. Not recently, because I've kind of like mastered my page now, like my explore page, but I did that before, especially when stuff would pop up that really didn't even like fit into stuff I cared about in my wheelhouse at all. I
was there's definitely something that comes on and I'm like, what? And why do you think I want to see this, Instagram? Yeah. What in the algorithm based on people you follow? Okay, everyone needs to be edited.
I think with every field, and this absolutely includes like the spirituality field, there, as with everything, there's going to be like the light and dark, there's going to be the levels to it. So like even within, because now especially like positivity is so on trend, spirituality is so on trend and mainstreamed in certain ways, you're going to get your levels of it. You're going to get the great, amazing. You're going to get the good. You're going to get the fair. You're going to get the mediocre, the bad, and the god awful. Yeah. And that's in every field, that's with every type of industry, every type of product. So yeah, I mean, when I'm on there, I definitely see a lot of BS positivity. I see a lot of like passive aggressive positivity. I see a lot of like people marketing not dealing with their problems as like, I'm not doing things that don't serve me. And it's like, well, no, you're just continuing your pattern of avoidance, you know?
Right.
But then at the same time, I'm not in judgment of it because we're all growing at our own pace. So if that's you in your life, that's okay.
That's my thing. I'm like, those pages, I am so glad that they flourish.
I'm not in competition with like,
and that's how I feel. I'm like, this is not a competition for me. Like an Instagram page like that and that style of makeup and someone doing makeup on themselves or that look, that's not what I do.
Yeah.
And we're not competing for anything. And again, like, I don't think, I'm never like, oh, you're whack, you're not a good makeup artist. I'm like, I think that like the skill and the precision that those looks take is like I don't even have the patience for that precision. Yeah. I just have a different aesthetic. You know, I kind of think that like our imperfections are kind of what make us beautiful. And I think that, you know, sometimes these weirdly precise photos they just look a little weirdly robotic and androidish to me, where I'm like, okay, like very artistic and creative, but maybe just not like for me. So yeah, I think I need to just click the see less of this, because my explore page is, well, it's a sight. It is colorful. I'm like, wow.
So before we wrap up and get out of here, I like to ask everybody if you have any book suggestions, podcast suggestions, or things that are on your radar that some of the folks listening might want to write down real quick.
Oh, wow. I should have researched this question before I came. Okay, true life confession. I, until like a year ago, didn't even know what a podcast was. Sean had to tell me. I was like, what's that? He's like, you literally have an app on your phone. You can listen to them. I was like, what is this? He was like, because that's when I first got asked to be on podcast.
People talking on my phone?
Yeah, so I actually am like not a huge podcast person.
Yeah.
Podcast, no, although I do love, and I have been a guest on this podcast, so I'm probably biased, but My Leaks podcast, My Tachu.
Oh, yeah, fire.
Every time I've listened to it, it's amazing. And also this girl, Liv Perez, Friend of a Friend podcast is great. And that's, and then your podcast, obviously, which you guys are already listening to.
What's like a favorite book of yours over the years?
Okay, so I have I'm a bookworm. I'm a nerd. I've been reading my whole life. My mom is an author. And I run the gamut from like really like nonfiction works to like complete, like my trash reading is like historical fiction. Like you gave me anything about the Tudors, I'm obsessed with it. So I'm going to give you like a range, because someone just the other day, literally yesterday, I think on Twitter, it was a writer who said, I need a palate cleanser. She's like, I need a book that's going to keep me like super engaged that I don't have to think about at all, but I just want to be super entertained by it.
Yeah.
And like toss it, which I almost take to think as like a beach read. But by the way, to your point, there's like levels to a beach read, because there's like some really crappy beach reads out there. One that I'm obsessed with, I don't even know if it's in print anymore, but I think you can find it. It's called Bringing Home the Birkin. Maybe it's like my fashion thing. I'm obsessed with it. It's a story about, this is like before online shopping and things like that. It's like a story about how this guy basically made himself a millionaire finding the coveted Birkin bag for rich women around the world who couldn't get their hands on it. He like unlocked the secret to how Hermes would sell you a Birkin bag. Because even now, if you go into like an Hermes store, you can't just walk in and say, I want to buy a Birkin. He like knows the secret. He knows how to do it. And he like, it's just like a fun read. It, you know, you could read it in a couple hours. It's super fun. So I always like recommend
what's it
to
that
people.
Called again?
Bringing Home the Birkin Michael Tanello. I only remember the name because I learned his word yesterday. It's a fun read.
Like the last couple of years, I just read so many like heavy books, like theology, philosophy, like
I'm in the middle of the Celestine
growth,
Prophecy
like,
right now.
Oh yeah.
I've never read it. I'm like struggling to like get into it though. And everyone has raved about it. I'm like,
sometimes it's some of those books, like you have to just, it has to be the right timing, you know, like, cause I like one of the books that is my go-to, and I talked about this on my IGTV, The Untethered Soul. Mm. That book is like, that book revolutionized my life, right? But the first four chapters, I wanted to peel my skin off. Like I was just reading it and I was like, ugh, this is agonizing.
I hate this.
What are you talking about? But then by the fifth chapter, I was like engulfed. And it just, sometimes you just have to push through certain chapters, or you need to put it down completely and try again next month.
That's what I'm like. I'm like, I put it down. I'm like, I'm going to pick it up again because I really want to read it because people rave about it.
Yeah.
And it's so funny because Sean doesn't read a ton and it's like his dog-eared
really
copy. So I'm like, I gotta read lifestyle. This book.
Okay, we gotta go.
We gotta go.
We're like way over. Okay. Yeah. I love you so
I love
much.
You.
I think you are so brilliant and so incredible.
Thanks.
And you're just one of the most effortlessly interesting and fascinating people.
Oh my gosh.
And you always have like great recommendations about everything. So I'm
your
so
check's
happy
in the mail.
The show.
Oh my God. I'm putting you
follow
on retainer.
Her on Twitter and Instagram at Joanna Simkin.
That's me.
And we'll be back in a couple weeks. Peace.
Later.
Big thank you for listening to this episode of the Dropping Gems podcast. This show is executive produced by Adrian Scott and me, Debbie Brown. Our theme music was created by producer Day One, and the poem that you heard at the beginning of the show, well, that was created especially for us by award-winning poet Nnamdi Okafor. If you have a quick moment right now, please hit subscribe on the show. And if you like what you heard, take it a step further and give us a 5-star rating. Until next time, you connect with me on IG at Debbie Brown or my website, debbiebrown.com. Be blessed.
The hit movie Bob Marley One Love is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Celebrate the life of an icon who inspired generations with his message of love, peace, and unity. Rated PG-13. Head to ParamountPlus.com/OneLove to try it free now.
AT&T Connects and Ode to Podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us, wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk. Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't give Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.